Blog Talk Radio.
Hey folks, welcome to Right from the Left Coast. I'm your host, Linda, and broadcasting from beautiful downtown Oceanside, California. It's about 74, 75 degrees. It is gorgeous here. It is like summer. Blue skies and not too many chemtrails, which I will be addressing later because we were going to go over some of the stuff that's happening tonight at the city council meeting. There's lots of fireworks all over the world. So much fun. And I can hear, and I can probably get phone callers today. Hopefully you can hear me, Yo or Nick, who's ever in the chat room with me, and that others will join, and I'll be able to take calls because apparently the servers are working today. Praise God. So with that of the praise of God, let's do a little reading from Scripture. This is Philippians 4, and that's verses 4 through 13. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let your kindliness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Jesus Christ. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at length you have revived your concern for me. You were indeed concerned for me, but you had no opportunity. Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. And I want to go on again. I think I have Mr. Strong trying to listen in. Are you there, Bill?
I'm here.
Yay, I can collect calls today. I can get calls. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition.
I'm glad at least you got on tonight.
I know. Well, you know what? When I talked to Ron after all that was over, and I can't remember if he had just come back from somewhere or whatever. So he kind of got my wrath in an email, and he said, what's happening is you've got your own servers, then you've got Skype server, and then you've got Blog Talk servers, and sometimes they don't match up, and it's just a real royal pain. There is, in the beginning, before I do the Skype thing, there's this little microphone at the top, and Lonnie can tell you about it. However, it says Direct Connect, but my computer doesn't recognize it, so I can't use it. so I don't have much choice. I only have Skype right now. So I'm going to try to hold this mic still because sometimes I get feedback, and I've been probably need to turn my speakers around. Anyway, I want to welcome Yo and Nick to the chat room. That's the only ones in there, and Bill, of course, and his crew. How many of you got there today?
I've just got me and my wife at the moment.
Yay. Hello, Jolene. Okay, so hopefully this room will fill up, and I know that people were disappointed last week, and it was a computer glitch, a technical server problem, and there's nothing I can do about it, you know. I'm not a genius on this stuff. I don't know how to do it. And people could hear me, but there was no way I could hear anyone else. Even if I picked you up on the mic, it was just a big, giant mess. So, anyway, welcome Nun649. He or she is here. So let me know in the chat room if you guys can hear me. So they should be able to since I've got you, but we're hoping. I came across a whole bunch of stuff this week. Now, I don't know if I'm giving feedback to you or you're giving it to me, but if things don't get held still, then we get all that noise. But anyway, one of the things that I had gotten from Imprimis, which is Hillsdale College, and I love Hillsdale College. They've got a lot of great stuff going on. And it says, the history and danger of administrative law. And I want to get to that after I read this, because it kind of prompted me to go back to this 2004 speech. And this was like 10 years ago, because this was September 2004. And this was Dr. Ron Paul, congressman at the time, on the House floor. And so I'm going to get that read to you, because it's going to put things into perspective. People are not honoring the Constitution. They don't even give it lip service anymore. So we need to, I know Mark Levin talks about this, and Rush Limbaugh talks about these things. So these are important to us. And his speech goes, "The United States Constitution is the most unique and best contract ever drawn up between a people and their government in history. Though flawed from the beginning, because all men are flawed, it nevertheless has served us well and set an example for the entire world. Yet no matter how hard the authors tried, the corrupting influence of power was not thwarted by the Constitution. The notion of separate state and local government championed by the followers of Jefferson was challenged by the Hamiltonians almost immediately following the ratification of the Constitution. Early on, the supporters of strong centralized government promoted central banking, easy credit, protectionism / mercantilism, and subsidies for corporate interests. Although the 19th century generally was kind to the intent of the Constitution, namely limiting government power, a major setback occurred with the Civil War and the severe undermining of the principle of sovereign states. The Civil War profoundly changed the balance of power in our federalist system, paving the way for centralized big government. Although the basic principle underlying the constitutional republic we were given was compromised in the post-Civil War period, it was not until the 20th century that steady and significant erosion of the constitutional restraints placed on the central government occurred. This erosion adversely affected not only economic and civil liberties, but foreign affairs as well. We now have persistent abuse of the Constitution by the executive, legislative, and judicial branches. Our leaders in Washington demonstrate little concern for the rule of law, liberty, and our republican form of government. Today, the pragmatism of the politicians, as they spend more than $2 trillion annually, and that was 10 years ago, creates legislative chaos. The vultures consume the carcass of liberty without remorse. On the contrary, we hear politicians brag incessantly about their ability to deliver benefits to their districts, thus qualifying themselves for automatic re-election. The real purpose of the Constitution was the preservation of liberty. It's not the Constitution that gives us our freedom. That comes from the Creator. But if we cherish freedom, the Constitution is needed to keep the power seekers from usurping that freedom and to hold government in check. But our government ignores this while spending endlessly, taxing and regulating the complacent electorate, who are led to believe their interests and needs are best cared for by a huge bureaucratic welfare state, convince themselves that enormous federal deficits and destructive inflation can be dealt with another day. The answer to the dilemma of unconstitutional government and runaway spending is simple. Restore a burning conviction in the hearts and minds of the people that freedom works and government largesse is a fraud. When the people once again regain their confidence in the benefits of liberty and demand from their elected leaders, Congress will act appropriately. The response of honorable men and women who represent us should be simply to take their oaths of office seriously, vote accordingly, and return our nation to its proper Republican origins. The results would be an economic prosperity, greater personal liberty, honest money, abolition of the Internal Revenue Service, and a work made more peaceful when we abandon the futile policy of building and policing an American empire. No longer would we yield our sovereignty to international organizations like the UN and that act outside the restraints placed on the government by the Constitution. Constitution and those who have sworn to uphold it are not perfect, and it is understandable that abuse occurs, but it shouldn't be acceptable. Without meticulous adherence to the principle of the rule of law, minor infractions become commonplace and the Constitution loses all meaning. Unfortunately, that is where we are today. this nonsense that the Constitution is a living, flexible document taught as gospel in our government schools must be challenged. The founders were astute enough to recognize the Constitution was not the perfect and wisely permitted amendments to the document, but they correctly made the process tedious and thus very difficult. Without a renewed love for liberty and confidence in its results, it will be difficult, if not impossible, to restore once again the rule of law under the Constitution. I have heard throughout my life how each upcoming election is the most important election ever and how the very future of our country is at stake. Those fears have always been grossly overstated. The real question is not who will achieve a partisan victory. The real question is, will we once again accept the clear restraints placed on the power of the national government by the Constitution? Obviously, the jury is still out on that one, on that issue. However, let me try to get my glasses to work here. However, what we choose to do about this constitutional crisis is the most important election of our times, and the results will determine the kind of society our children will inherit. I believe it is worthwhile for all of us to tirelessly pursue the preservation of the elegant Constitution with which we have been so blessed. And that, I think, is absolutely true. I love Dr. Paul for that. Which kind of brings me around to the history of the administrative law and the dangers of it. And all of this talking about liberty brings to mind my speech. See, I'm going to go at 8 o'clock your time, 5 o'clock my time, to the city council and speak. We have a lot of speakers tonight because there's a huge election coming up, as you know, November 4th, and we have enough, you know, microcosm of the craziness in D.C. right here in good old Oceanside. So it's pretty nuts. So what did you think of Dr. Paul's speech, Mr. Bill?
I have to agree with him. You were talking about these elected that go out there and bring money back to their district. And a part of that is the problem there is they're going and stealing from districts that are watching and keeping themselves in check and not overspending.
Right.
But you've got these people who districts are so far in debt that they feel they have an inherent right to steal from the other district that watches what they do.
Well, you know, according to this speech that he gave, he's talking about both parties here. Yeah, and you know, right?
Well, you know how I feel about both parties. Same crap, yep. Just a different pile.
Yeah, I'm going to put the number in here to call in, so because we've only got an hour tonight, but it's going to be kind of cool because I want to get through some of this stuff. There's a ton of stuff to go through. But this was kind of a almost like a providential thing because I got this the other day and I wanted to dovetail it with the other speech that just got done, and it's talking about administrative law, which I had heard Ron speak about. And a lot of this is they make up rules, they've got all these entities that circumvent the Constitution, they do what they want, and it's just horrible. It says there are many complaints about administrative law, including that it is arbitrary, that it is a burden on the economy, and that it is an intrusion on freedom. The question I will address here is whether administrative law is unlawful, and I will focus on constitutional history. Those who forget history, it is often said, are doomed to repeat it. Well, we're doing that now. It's almost like 36 Germany for my taste. And this is what has happened in the United States with the rise of administrative law, or more accurately, administrative power. Administrative law is commonly defended as a new sort of power, a product of the 19th and 20th centuries that developed to deal with the problems of modern society in all its complexity. From this perspective, the framers of the Constitution could not have anticipated it, and the Constitution could not have barred it. What I will suggest in contrast is that administrative power is actually very old. It revives what used to be called prerogative or absolute power, and it is thus something that the Constitution centrally prohibited. Sounds like they're going, and they are, they're going to the prerogative power of kings, and that's what we fought against so vehemently. But first, what exactly do I mean by administrative law or administrative power? Put simply, administrative acts are binding or constraining edicts that come not through law, but through other mechanisms or pathways. For example, when an executive agency issues a rule, which would be like the EPA, concerning Americans barring an activity that results in pollution, for instance, or restricting how citizens can use their land, Agenda 21, it is an attempt to exercise binding legislative power, not through an act of Congress, but through an administrative edict. Similarly, when an executive agency adjudicates a violation of one of these edicts, in order to impose a fine or some other penalty, it is an attempt to exercise binding judicial power, not through a judicial act, but again through an administrative act. So let me see if I can get down to this portion. It says, the constitutional history of the past 1,000 years is in common law countries records the repeated ebb and flow of absolutism on the one side and law on the other. English kings were widely expected to rule through law. They had parliament for making law and courts of law for adjudicating cases, and they were expected to govern through the acts of these bodies. But kings were discontent with governing through the law and often acted on their own. The personal power that kings exercised when evading the law was called prerogative power. And I think that's what we're experiencing with all of these alphabet agencies and Omegat's executive privilege and things that they have usurped that they shouldn't. So, and that's what Dr. Paul was also speaking on. And there are other avenues that the states can go with nullification, which the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions, and I did that about 2 or 3 weeks ago on my show, and Ron was happy that I had addressed that. So this is what's happening. This article is way too long to go through the whole thing, so I didn't want to go through that. But I do want to give you guys my speech on, because I had received a flyer from Jerry Kern, and he's an incumbent running again for re-election as city council. And I'm going to go in about 45 minutes. I'm going to be speaking when they call our names in front of the city council this evening, because we're trying to promote our two candidates and go up against the ones who are really bad. So these guys spend a lot of money, you know, as they do, and all these big four-part colors, glossy ads with their pictures on it and all this stuff. And so one of the points on this flyer, it says, the regional leaders endorsing Jerry, Assembly Member Rocky Chavez. Well, I have voted against him 2 times running, and this time I will go against him with voting for Thomas Krause. Fortunately, my mother's ballot also has many of the same people, so I get to vote twice. Yay! It's a mail-in ballot. It's kind of fun. So don't tell anybody. And then the other thing, and you'll hear in my speech how I'm addressing this, because all this stuff is just nonsense. One of his accolades listed here as his record of accomplishments is leading a cooperative approach to protect our environment. I had to laugh on that one. And protecting our quality of life. I also had to laugh on that one, because obviously no one's even looking at the chemtrails that are flying over here daily of Oceanside City. So if you guys will bear with me, this is a less than 3-minute speech that I'm going to give this evening, and you guys are privileged to hear it first, because y'all are out of state. It's hopefully not too many people from California. Well, most of them don't kind of tune in anyway. So Honorable Mayor, City Council members, and then I give my name and my address. I, for one, will be so glad when this November 4th is over. Elections are so exhausting. All the political ads and campaigning. I happened to catch the interview on Monday on Mike Slater's show featuring our two incumbent council members. They seemed to delight in bashing Mayor Wood and Councilwoman Sanchez. But the strange part was the reference to Mayor Wood as being a rhino, which I found curious, as this mailer for Jerry says he's been endorsed by some regional leaders, and one person named on this flyer is Rocky Chavez. Now, if there was ever a rhino, Chavez would be a poster boy for that title. Rocky is as much of a Republican as Joe Biden. I try to vote for the person, not the party. I don't agree with a candidate on every issue, nor do I disagree with a candidate on each issue. The bullet points on this mailer include four of Jerry's accomplishments and record of leadership. Two of them are a cooperative approach to protect our environment and protecting our quality of life. This is an area that most incumbent officials in the entire state of California are failing miserably in. After this election, my next council meeting speech will address those issues. Time does not permit this evening. In the meanwhile, I will support Dana Corso and Chuck Lowry, although I still need to work on Chuck somewhat when it comes to the true conservation, liberty, private property, and the truth about the phony climate change hoax, which is the antithesis of freedom. Thank you. And that ends my speech. What do you think?
I like it.
I'm sick of these people. You know, I'm sick of the hypocrisy, the lies, and the nonsense. You know, like they're so high and mighty. And nothing, and like I said, I'm not going to address the chemtrails tonight, but I will, because I have pictures of them, too.
You know, I called in the C-SPAN this morning. They were talking about this Ebola, and the woman flew from Cleveland to Dallas. And
right.
Before they cut me off, the only question I asked was this. How the hell did she get to that to Cleveland to begin with?
Yeah.
Nobody talked. They haven't said a word about that. How she got to Cleveland. And, yeah, you got to check all the people she was on the flight with, but now you've also got to check all the people those people have been in contact with.
It's sick. Well, you know, you know,
they're trying to play the public as fools, as being totally stupid. And like I said, they couldn't get me off the air fast enough when I asked them, how did she get to Cleveland in the first place?
Yeah, of course not. Well, you know, look, Glenn talked about this yesterday hugely on his show. He said, he's done it again today. I know that he's spending a lot of time on it. He says, you know what, this might just be the perfect storm. We've got ISIS, we've got Ebola, we've got the introvirus from the, you know, Hispanic schmucks from Central America being flown in here. And they could use this as a huge crisis to do their martial law and just shut it down. If the economy crashes, Bill, they'll do it. You know they will.
Well, if you saw the stock market today and you know the facts of this year, the stock market is underwater for the year.
Well, the stock market, I'm talking about, like, okay, people aren't going to fly on planes anymore. People are not going to go to the doctor anymore. People aren't even going to use cash. They're not going to go to the supermarket. They're going to stay home. They're not going to send their kids to school. This thing, I mean, if they pull that, if they panic that bad, you know what's going to happen. It's going to be. Huh?
Last week I saw a doctor, the first time I've got a new doctor, the first time I saw him. And he brought up the CDC, and I know he did not like what I had to say about him. He said, my opinion was just conspiracy theories. And I said, no, sir, it's fact.
Which part was the fact, darling?
Well, he was telling me how the CDC has control over all the medications. They wouldn't let nothing bad out, and I was letting him know who controlled the CDC and the WHO, and that both of them were against us.
Sure.
There's no way they can do their global agenda of depopulation without the CDC and the WHO being assistant.
Sure. Absolutely. You got to tell these clowns, this is not a theory. This is a fact. There's a big difference. When you have an illegitimate government with psychotic bastards running it right from D.C. and they're the puppets of the New World Order and the U.N. and the Vatican and whoever else is in charge, because these idiots are so stupid they couldn't rub two brain cells together, all combined, Pelosi, Biden, Barry, Jarrett, Hildebeest, none of them. They're disgusting.
It's not so bad that they're ignorant, but they think the rest of us are totally ignorant too.
They're gonna find out, because they can. You know what? Hi, Rod. Welcome to the show. They're gonna find out, because, I mean, people are already talking about this on what are they on the? I can't remember which one it was. Somebody down in San Diego that's got their, like a firing range or a ammunition or gun sales or whatever, and they're talking about, you know, that and Glenn was talking about what's going to happen if these other people who figure out that you were the one that put your food supplies away and they didn't. You know, there's going to be a lot of, you know, you better lock and load. And everybody's talking about this right now. And it's not going to be pretty. And they're going to find out who's, you know, there will be Revolution Part 2. There will be another 1776 in this country. I'm predicting it right now.
Well, my fear is this, that when we're doing that battle here, all hell's going to break loose in the Middle East. For Israel and everything else, we're not going to be able to come to the aid because we're going to be too busy fighting here.
I know. Israel can take care of herself. I'm telling you this right now. Look, that's what Dr. Paul has been talking about. If you think that Jefferson and Washington didn't have concerns about foreign interests, of course they did. Jefferson had to fight our first foreign war with in Tripoli with the Muslim pirates in the Barbary Coast. But George Washington and Jefferson both agreed, the less you get involved with these clowns, yes, let's do free trade, but do not go nation building or anything else. Stay away from them. Get these entanglements away from us. My God, they fought for 8 years to get away from that crap. My God.
Here we are today with a government that has went and took out other countries' leaders or propped up, like in Egypt when they were trying to prop up the Muslim Brotherhood, and kudos to Egypt's military and their people for throwing them out.
Well,
now you look at what we got going on with the Kurds. We're not giving the Kurds crap. Why? Because the Kurds seem to be the only people in that area that don't have a problem with other religions.
Right.
They don't attack and kill the Christians being led by an Islamist. And that's why he's not wanting to help the Kurds at all.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. I've got about a half an hour left today, and I'm glad we've got some people in. I tried to get Ron to come in, but I know he's killing himself with the work situation. So I'm going to go to this. There's one. I just wanted to pull this way. It was an independent journal review, and it says, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but I know Rod Luke sent me one of them, and I get them all day long. So it says, what a public school wants to call kids instead of boys and girls takes political correctness to a warped new level. And this was, I think it was, let me check out the place where it's at. I can't remember what state it's in. This was, hold on. It's okay. Now, of all places, Nebraska, which is the heartland, it just blew me away. During controversy, after teachers were reportedly handed training documents instructing them to refrain from calling their students boys or girls, this is progressivism nut job stuff on steroids. The document obtained by Nebraska Watchdog wants to make sure teachers aren't using phrases like "you guys" and "ladies and gentlemen." Oh, I guess that's passé. Instead, it offers us the solution for students to be identified by things that are personally important to them, such as their favorite color or TV show. This is sick. So it says, this is what kind of nonsense is. 12 easy steps on the way to gender inclusiveness. This is inclusiveness. This is the gay agenda. This is Karl Marx on steroids, guys, I'm telling you. Avoid asking kids to line up as boys or girls or separating them by gender. Instead, use things like odd and even birth date, or what would you choose, skateboards or bikes, milk or juice, or dogs or cats. Oh my God. Invite students to come up with choices themselves. Consider using tools like the appointment schedule to form pairs or groups. Always ask yourself, will this configuration create a gendered space? Can you believe this? There's 12 of these. It's like, I can't even go through them all. It says, don't use phrases such as boys and girls, you guys, ladies and gentlemen, and similarly gendered expressions to get kids' attention. Instead, say things like calling all readers, or hey, campers, or could all of the athletes come here, create classroom names, and then ask all of the purple penguins to meet at the rug. Oh my God, have visual images reinforcing gender inclusion, pictures of people who don't fit gender norms, signs that strike out sayings like all boys or all girls, all genders welcome, door hangers. Look for examples in the media that reinforce gender stereotypes or binary models of gender. It won't be hard. They're everywhere. Oh my God, when others call it out and interrogate it.
I kind of got a thing there. Let me see a woman get pregnant without sperm. Let me see a man get pregnant without an egg.
You know where this comes from? I know. Well,
it cannot be done. So it's unnatural.
Okay, here's where this is what I know to be true. This comes from Karl Marx, okay? One of his tenets of communism and infiltrating in his manifesto is make degenerate, perverse, and disgusting sexual behavior appear to be normal, especially to young children. This is part of all of this. This is where this comes from, Bill. I'm telling you right now. So, I mean, they've already done it in California with this transgender or this gender-neutral bathroom.
And they're using it as a way to attack Christianity, to try to make Christianity change their doctrines and their principles to accept it.
Well, they're going against every moral clause, every tenet, every religious morality of our founding. They want it gone. They want God gone. The state is all powerful. They want to promote this homosexuality. They want to make everybody think that there's 50% of the people who are gay, which is incorrect. That's only less than 2% of the population in this country. And it's just evil what's happening. And I'm telling you, anyone who continues to put their children in a public school, especially in the state of California, has got to have their heads examined. They should be, like, I don't know, they should be taken to task, and somebody should, like, see if they are even breathing. Hey, Doc, welcome to the show. I mean, it's nuts. I wouldn't put, there's no way. These are communist indoctrination daycare centers. They're not schools.
What gets me is they're not smart. The gays aren't smart enough to look that you've got a leadership that is supporting Muslims around the world. And if that is the Muslim nations got their way, they'd be executing everyone
who's
gay.
I know. Not too smart, huh?
Well,
pretty silly.
I gotta admit, I am flabbergasted at how ignorant and ill-informed the public of this country is.
Well, there's no education there. They are uneducated. They are not educated, Bill. Not one ounce. I mean, when I saw I think it was the Black Caucus or Democratic Black Caucus or whatever, talking about this. I think it wasn't Mark Dice. It was somebody like him who does all this stuff. And they interviewed these people, and he asked them if they thought that Barry was a socialist. And they said no. And he says, what's your definition of a socialist? Not one of them knew what it was. They came up away with things that were just so off the wall. It blew my mind. They are so stupid.
If you want to put it into a racial way, as they try, the left tries so hard to do, I would like some of these black leaders to come out and tell us what immigration and amnesty is going to do to them.
I know.
Tell their people what they're pushing for and what it's going to do to their jobs, their education, and their living.
There's the actual Escondido City Council. I went to the first one in July prior to coming. I think it was before I came to Delaney. I can't remember if it was. Anyway, everybody was there. There was a lot of people. It was overflowing. There's going to be a lot tonight, but La Raza and all the SEIU and all the crazy about, you know what, SOBs are going to be there. They're still talking about making the 96-bed nursing home into a center for these illegal DACA kids that have been flown in all the way back from whenever that happened. And so I can't make tonight because I'm going to go to the meeting, and I've got a thing that I wish I could go to in Carlsbad, but I'm going to be too exhausted by then. there's Dr. Pesta is there talking about Common Core, and he's amazing. So I have to remember to give this to Jenny when she's like ready to deal with it. This is her birthday week, so she's, you know, she's kind of busy. But it's just overwhelming what what I heard on Mike Slater's show today was that this particular council, especially with Mayor Abbott, that they will defeat this nonsense probably 4-1. And the one is Olga Diaz, who is a complete La Raza amnesty, you know, nut job. And I believe she's running. I think she's running for mayor this time around, and hopefully she's defeated. And that's in Escondido. I can't vote in that district, of course. But, I mean, it's crazy here. If you think that the national scenes and the state scenes are bad, man, your local stuff is just it's just as entertaining, let me tell you. It's nuts, Bill. And you know from going out dealing with stuff.
I know in my local area, the corruption and the greed of the elected and how they keep holding on to the power and they keep controlling the money coming in and it goes to them and their cronies or their families, keep having the same name come up, last name. And you know that it's the second, third, fourth generation of a family seeking office.
Mm-hmm.
People, wake the hell up. These are people
that
they're not serving the public. They're self-servers. They are serving themselves, and they are dipping into the taxes and funds of the people to pad their own pockets.
That's what Dr. Paul was talking about when they were, you know, they do this and they think that they are going to be perpetually reelected because they're bringing home the bacon. And it's just crap. These people, I swear to God, they are almost as stupid as the ones who don't even know the definition of socialism. I mean, that's the kind of crap that I deal with every single. Okay, I want to say goodnight to Rod. Thanks, babe. Catch it in the archives. I've only got 23 minutes left, so it will be a short listen for you. I was hoping others would come tonight. I know Ron's in and out, but he's probably got family and stuff, and he's probably tearing his hair out because his company's been taken over by a giant megacorp, and he's ready to get into the bunker and do his own thing or whatever, find another part-time job and just be done with it. If it were me, I would just put out my calling card and say, come over to my house in my garage and I'll change your oil or whatever. Make some money on the side. But he's still too young to get Social Security, and he's probably one of those who wouldn't take it anyway. But that's, you know, it's California, Rod. We say babe all the time. You know, what do we know? We're Valley girls. I was in the Valley for too long. Anyway,
I'm going to have to back off here and catch you in archives. I've got a house load coming in.
Good.
But it's been great. Keep doing
what you're
doing, and give them hell tonight, sister. Give them hell.
I will. Oh, they're gonna hate to see me coming. Let me tell you, because they always do. They, you know, like you've been through that. They hate to see you coming, man. And God bless you and your wife.
And many blessings.
Yes, many blessings. I'm gonna go back to my stuff here. If anybody else wants to call in, please do so. No, I didn't see that. I didn't see that one, Rod. But I'm going to go back here and start. Anybody wants to call in, please do, because I only have 20 minutes left. And if I have to run this off early, but we're going to, because I got to go down to that meeting, see if I can find some really good stuff. Oh, here's one. This is really good. I'm going to read this one for you guys. This is a friend of mine, Bob Markley. It says, regarding the deserter prisoner exchange, Obama recently spoke of three former presidents. You're going to love this. You may recall that a few weeks ago, President Obama spoke of three former presidents making prisoner swaps at the end of wars that took place on their watch, much like this swap, he said convincingly. The Obama sycophant, lapdog CNN News carried this quote. This is what happens at the end of wars, President Barack Obama boasted Tuesday when he was asked about swapping American Army Sergeant Deserter for five vicious Taliban terrorists. Quote, that was true for George Washington, that was true for Abraham Lincoln, and that was true for FDR. That's been true of every combat situation that at some point you make sure that you try to get your folks back, and that's the right thing to do. End of quote. Really? That statement blatantly demonstrates that the most powerful man in the world and two-term president of the United States lacks even a grade school level of knowledge of American history. Specifically, history as it relates to the to three of the most famous presidents, and it demonstrates, again, that we have essentially elected a foreigner who has no understanding of the very country that he reigns supreme over. Then again, he was educated at an Ivy League school, so you can't expect too much. What's wrong with his statements? Let's keep it simple. Everything is wrong. George Washington did not become president until 6 years after the Revolutionary War ended in 1783. By 1789, there was no longer any prisoners for him to exchange. Abraham Lincoln was assassinated in mid-April of 1865. The Civil War ended the following month. He was still dead at the time, so no deals were made to exchange prisoners after the war. All prisoners were simply freed. FDR died of a stroke before the end of World War II. Like Lincoln, he stayed dead after the war, so he couldn't do what this jerk says he did. You recall that Harry S. Truman made the decision to drop two nuclear bombs on Japan, and that's true, ending World War II. He made no deals for prisoners. We went in and released them when necessary. None of the presidents that Obama noted were in office at the ends of those wars, making it impossible for them to make any sort of prisoner swaps, let alone the 5-for-1 plus unspecified cash for a deserter and traitor by our 57 states president. It should be pointed out that countless deserters and traitors were shot or hanged during all the three of the aforementioned wars. Let me see if I can find the rest. I'm sorry. It's my thing's jumping around here. What amazes one even more than the ignorance of the president is that he has managed to surround himself with a staff that is just as clueless. So there you have it. It's absolutely amazing that we have to put up with this. I think Rod's still there. He's asking me to see the advertised necklace, six shooter. No, I didn't see it. I haven't seen it, but send it to me so I can look at it. Thank you so much. And I'm glad you're still listening. Like I said, we've got a couple minutes left and I don't have any callers. So I want to invite folks to call in. None, you certainly may call in. Doc, please call in. Yo or Nick, Rod, I know Rod won't do it, but anybody who wants to say hi and things like that, because I might just cut out early so I can do. Okay, thanks, Rod. Take care and have a great evening. I'm going to go ahead and do a song and get out early because my friend Ron can't make it. You're not too shy. Give me a break. You have a great phone voice, too, so you should be fine. It's like talking to somebody on the phone. I'm running the show anyway. So I'm going to go ahead and do Living in America, and you guys be so blessed, and thanks so much. And I'm sorry last week was a bust because I could not get any calls. I couldn't really run my board the way I would like to. So thank God that everything worked out this week. And I'm going to go give them hell at the city council tonight. So it's going to be a real blast. I want to play Living in America, and you guys have a great night. Tune in for Mikey B tomorrow if you can. I know Miss Roland's not doing shows right now, but you guys are wonderful. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll play this song. Thanks a lot. Have a great night. See you guys tomorrow. Mikey.